Hello and welcome to the Cafe Hustle podcast with me, Andy Jones. Today I'm talking to Angus McKenzie, who's a strategic accounts manager at Frachino, and they make its British-made espresso machines and various other equipment like grinders, etc. But today we're talking about the common misconceptions in the coffee industry around coffee machines and what people should be looking for when they select their coffee equipment for their business. And then we also touch on the design and build and Frachino's approach to that and what they need in terms of filling the needs of today's coffee shops. So we're going to jump into this episode as soon as we get back from thanking our sponsors. Cafe Hustle is brought to you in partnership with Road to Cloud, the people management platform for shift-based teams. Start your 30-day free trial at thecafehustle.com/roadtocloud now to see how much easier planning rotas, recording attendance, managing annual leave really can be. So Angus, thank you very much for joining me on the Cafe Hustle. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Thank you for allowing me to be part of your thriving hospitality and coffee shop community. Nice to join the hustle.
Yeah, no, thank you very much. And like I say, I've really had you guys on my list very early on because I was, you know, familiar with your machines. The Frachino brand is certainly the places where I've, certainly the other coffee shops I've been to, starting to see it more and more as well, which is great from a British point of view. But I'm going to jump into, first and foremost, what drives you, what motivates you as a person?
Yeah, well, I'm very glad to answer that. I think that those that know me well might consider me a bit of a sort of a coffee nerd, but really coffee's always been a big passion of mine. And I think throughout my whole career in the coffee industry, I've always just wanted to make coffee accessible to consumers. My biggest hope and ambition has really been for consumers to be able to recognize, understand, and celebrate great coffee. And you know, ultimately, I've been involved throughout my career by helping operators choose and decide upon the equipment and the processes that they might use in order to facilitate that. To me, coffee should not be something that is elite. It's important that it's accessible with all the things that we have going on around us in the world. You know, coffee should be a joy, and it should be something that people, in my humble opinion, should be able to experience every day if they wish to do so, whether it's at the workplace, whether it's out of home, or whether it's in the home, as with so many of us working from home these days. So really, that drives me, the ambition to spread the knowledge and help more people to enjoy great coffee. And really, my purpose is to help remove the pain and confusion around coffee equipment, which is still a hugely challenging area for many people. And if I can just make their journey a little bit simpler and give good, solid advice and value to the solutions that they seek, then I'm a happy man. So really, not massively complex, you know, drivers or purpose, but it's something that fulfills me. And I'm pleased to say that I've never woken up in the morning having lost that drive. It stays with me. I've always said that if I ever make a really great cup of coffee at home and I kind of lose the magic and think this is no longer special anymore, then I move on. But I'm very pleased to say that that hasn't happened yet. So yeah.
As most people know, coffee bites you, doesn't it? It grabs you. Whether you're on whichever side, as a consumer, solely as a consumer, or even on the commercial side, and obviously with you guys providing machines, you've got to be passionate about coffee. If you weren't, you wouldn't be able to put 100% into what you do.
Yeah, I think it's important. I think coffee has to be accessible. I've always said it shouldn't be a boutique experience, but if ever, what's amusing is if you ever sort of introduce yourself to people that don't know you and say, well, what do you do? And you mention that you're in the coffee industry, they always ask for your advice. They're always seeking to replicate that great coffee experience at home, or they want advice. They know often the sort of the flavors that they like in a good cup of coffee, but they don't know how to make it. So I think it's important. And I, you know, I'm not alone. There are a great many passionate people in our wonderful industry who spend a lot of time communicating and helping people move forward in their passion. But you're right, it is universal. And I always say, you know, certainly, well, you never forget a bad cup of coffee, but once you've had a great cup of coffee, you don't ever want to lower your standards again. And with so many great UK roasters and the classic Italian roasters as well, we've never been more spoiled for choice. So it's a great time in the coffee world, and it's an exciting time. You know, obviously there are challenges ahead, but you know, it's certainly an exciting time with heaps of choice for the consumer and for businesses.
And we're going to talk today about those misconceptions. I know you mentioned it a little bit earlier about when it comes to selecting the coffee machines in particular and what really we should be looking for. But just before we do get into that, what's your journey? How do you get into working for Frappuccino today?
Well, you know, like a lot of people, I suppose, in our trade, I started my life off working in hospitality. You know, even when I was still at school, I always was working as a waiter or a sort of a barman. People might say, well, how can you work as a barman when you're at school? But of course, you're behind the bar, you're cleaning glasses, you're not allowed to serve, you're going around, to coin a phrase from your podcast, you're hustling in the pub and doing all the work that you can in exchange for a small pay packet and a few Cokes. But I started off doing that. And then I decided when I left school that I wanted to really to try and take a professional route into hospitality. So I studied at what was then called the Scottish Hotel School, which was part of Strathclyde University in Glasgow. And I went on to get a degree in hotel and catering management with marketing there, which I thoroughly enjoyed. And all during that time, I was working in bars and restaurants as well to sort of subsidize my student years. And from then, really, I went on to work either directly in the coffee industry, working with roasters, or in the hospitality industry itself. I ran my own coffee shop in Glasgow for a couple of years as well. But I was always either in hospitality or on the supply side of it. And I was fortunate enough to work for some incredible coffee roasters, including Kimbo, who were sort of Italy's second largest coffee roaster. I headed up their UK operation for many years, which I thoroughly enjoyed. But when I left there, I went to work more on the equipment side of things, because I felt that's an area where I wanted to deepen my knowledge. And I've worked with Italian coffee manufacturers. But ultimately, I found a sort of meeting of the minds at Frappuccino, because they very much share the view that, you know, good coffee and good coffee equipment should be accessible. There's no real sort of equipment or ingredient snobbery within their ranks. And they're a very proud British manufacturer with incredibly high standards and a can-do attitude. So when I found myself having a discussion with them about becoming involved, I just loved everything that they did, their passion, you know, the facilities that they have, which are really quite incredible and very, very modern, but all underpinned by huge attention to detail, sort of innovation, and a great desire just to build quality equipment and to be able to provide that into the market at value. So, you know, combined with all the experience that I had and my desire to make great coffee more accessible, it felt like a good place to be. And I'm glad to say that ever since I've been with them, you know, we've enjoyed success, and we're on a journey which is an exciting one.
Yeah. It makes a difference when you, as an employee, you can align so closely to the company's mission or the company's purpose, like you're describing there, and it makes it such a great place to work for you, because you're very much working towards the same thing. Is that what you find working in at Frappuccino?
I think that as you get on in years, you learn quite quickly to distinguish between marketing fluff and authenticity, and you realize that there's a difference between a story and history. And really, Frappuccino has a very rich history, and their journey has been an incredible one. And I always say, if anyone's fortunate enough to come and visit the factory, they really can see how everything is done and the way that the business operates. And it's a very hands-on, can-do company with a very strong appreciation of its customer base, who are incredibly loyal. And, you know, I, when I was exposed to that, it's infectious. I thought, this is amazing. And it what fascinated me was that there's a lot of our industry that perhaps holds in high esteem some foreign machinery brands, particularly the Italian brands. And I haven't really always gone down to the nitty-gritty of thinking, well, what's the difference between British-made equipment and them? And really, when you look at that process and when you start to understand it and see the quality that's being made and the longevity of the equipment, there is a very compelling argument for, you know, for buying British in terms of value, in terms of carbon footprint, but also supporting you know, jobs in a factory which is full of passion and real artisan skills in the Midlands, which is, you know, the heart really of the manufacturing industry to this day in the UK. So yeah, your question, you know, it's powerful for me. I'm at a stage in life where I wouldn't be involved with any business where I really didn't feel a connection. I'm too old for that, and yet they inspire me. They drive me forward. They're lovely people. They have authenticity and integrity, and these values are dear to me, and they appear dear to them as well.
Yeah, and it's certainly something we're seeing across the whole spectrum of the workforce, even like certainly younger people, certainly from a cafe and coffee shop point of view.
Yeah.
The younger people that are coming in now, they're a lot more purpose driven. They want to be, it's not just a wage that they're after anymore. And that's the way the world is now going. So turning now to the coffee machines themselves, what are some of the big misconceptions that you certainly see from chatting to prospective buyers or clients? And what sort of things do you answer those misconceptions with?
It's a great question, and I think there are many misconceptions. In my experience, often when either a business, a group, or a chain, or even an individual is thinking about the business that they want to establish, very often they'll do a bit of research, or they might go walk about in a very large city, whether that's Manchester or Birmingham or London or Brighton, and have a look at what some of the sort of the trendy artisan coffee shops are doing. And I think that the one real misconception that comes out of that is the idea that if you have a very fancy badge on your coffee machine on the counter, that either it will help you to sell more coffee, or indeed that it will help you to make better coffee. And I have seen an awful lot of people perhaps spend more money than they need to, in the hope or in the belief that either of these things is true. And I think in that sense, it really is a misconception. In so many instances, people might be paying for technology that they don't need. They're purchasing what can be very complex tools, which often are designed for experimentation, and people with a real deep-seated coffee knowledge and talent, often in a sort of laboratory environment. And sometimes people will spend an awful lot of money and not even use these tools. And also, what's interesting is that some of the technology now can enable you to find some really sort of unusual flavor dimensions. But a lot of UK businesses are buying what I might call sort of commercial coffee blends, which are great coffees, but they're not up there in the sort of 90 plus scoring specialty coffees. And you're not going to pull out these real subtle nuances from commercial grade coffee. And most people perhaps running a coffee shop on the high street or a chain or a restaurant, like any other business, they've had to watch their price costs and the cost base. So if they're buying a decent coffee at what they regard a fair price, they're simply not going to see the benefits of a very, very high-end machine on that basis. And also, a bit like sometimes, as you find with modern cars, the more complex electronics that are in that machine, then the more that can go wrong, the harder it might be to do diagnostics on. And also, it may be more challenging to get the very specific part that is required to diagnose it. Some of the very modern systems now are built in modules, which sounds great in that an engineer can come and change it over really quickly. But sometimes within a module, you might be paying an awful lot of money for new parts that you don't need, whereas it's just one component that's actually broken. So I think that's what we see the most. You know, it's people should try and have an understanding of the market that they're in. The high-end specialty boutique market is a very niche, small percentage sector of our industry. And may I say, I commend them because they lead with very high standards and outstanding products. And they have really championed a lot of wonderful trends in our industry that often do filter down.
Yeah.
But I see a coffee machine still as a business tool, as much as a passion. It has a return on investment to pay back to that business. You know, times are getting tougher, and I think, ironically, the luxury sector might be one of the first to fall when people start to feel the pinch. So my advice is, you know, screw on your head and buy with your head as much as your heart, and don't get carried away with the type of equipment which, you know, you might aspire to, but you don't necessarily need. And the one analogy that I would use is that, you know, if you're buying a car, have a think. Are you buying your car to use on the roads, or are you buying a car to take onto the racetrack? Because it's important that we buy fit for purpose and something that will last as well. So I think that's the biggest misconception, that people go around these very high-end sites, they see a badge on the bar, they think that's what we want. They get fixated with that. They end up spending too much money for a machine that's too complicated for them, that they don't require. And they end up paying a lot of money over the subsequent years in servicing that and maintaining that. So my advice is just almost take a moment, screw on your head, and really think, what is it that you need as much as what is it that you might desire?
With competition for hospitality staff fiercer than ever, it's never been more important to offer your staff a five-star employee experience. One way that hospitality businesses all over the UK are doing that is by using Rotocloud. Rotocloud is the web-based platform for planning rotas, recording attendance, managing staff holidays, and more. It also makes life easy for your staff by giving them 24/7 access to their rotas, timesheets, and as well as letting them do things like request annual leave, arrange their own cover for any shifts they can't work, all via the free Rotocloud mobile app. Head to thecafehustle.com/Rotocloud now to claim your free 30-day trial and give your team the kind of employee experience they deserve. Yeah. And what should people be looking for then, specifically when it comes to choosing their equipment? I know certainly for me as an owner, when it came to a coffee machine, it's all about consistency and reliability, and really, anything above that, like you say, it's just a nice to have.
Yep.
And well, my personal philosophy, and it'll be no surprise, is that I'd rather see, you know, the difference in between a top level luxury brand like you're talking about, the difference in the prices between that and a coffee machine that will be reliable and consistent should be reinvested in the people, in your baristas, because they're the people who are operating the machine. And it's not the machine that gives you great coffee at the end of the day. It's the skill and the knowledge of that barista who is able to dial the shot in, you know, to adjust as they need to throughout the day. Because a lot of people generally even, and I certainly know this happens, is they dial in the shot at the start of the day, and then that's it for the rest of the day, when in reality, you need to be on that every couple of hours as humidity changes, temperature changes, how many coffees you've served. Because even as, like, for example, your grinders, once they heat up, they're operating at different grind settings effectively. So what is it people should be looking for when it comes to objectively choosing a solid coffee machine for their business?
That's a great question, and you know, I'm going to give a relatively lowbrow answer to that, because I believe in solid practical advice, and I think that in my mind, if people get the basics right first, then they can go on to search wisely, knowing on their needs. So I have a kind of almost like a 10-point rule that I generally would consult with people on and say, please, let's address these questions just before you go forward. So I'll run through these because I think they're often useful. The first great one, of course, is how many cups of coffee do you think you might sell? Because there are different machines with different boiler sizes, with different powered elements that are really geared up to different daily amounts. And you know, I would say to somebody, the best analogy here, you know, going back to cars, is you wouldn't necessarily buy a 1 liter type car if you're going to spend the bulk of your days on the motorway doing high mileage. And it's exactly the same for coffee machines. So in your heart of hearts, whether you're going to be serving, you know, 30 coffees a day, 50 a day, or 100 a day. And we know that in many environments, the weekend figure might double, but be really realistic about what you might sell. And then think, if I was wildly successful, what would that number go to? Because there's nothing worse than buying a coffee machine for your demand today and then in 18 months' time thinking, I've outgrown that. That's bad economics. So plan ahead, but be realistic about the volume requirements that you have. That will allow anybody to serve you better. Secondly, and sometimes overlooked, think about how you're actually going to serve your hot beverages. Now, that might sound straightforward, but are you going to serve your hot beverages in a classic style sort of cappuccino saucer? Are you going to have tall latte glasses? And some of the artisan operators might be drawing sharp breath and say, oh no, they went out, but a lot of people still use them. And if they're popular and they're right for your customers, then that's exactly
absolutely.
What you use.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or are you going to be doing a lot of takeaway coffee? And if we think back to some of the difficult times we've had in the last few years, you know, takeaway coffee has changed a great deal. I see a lot of places that never did takeaway coffee that did it perhaps during COVID that are continuing to do it. And it can be a real upspend. But if you can't fit, and the whole purpose of this is that all these different types of serving vessels have a different height to them. Some of them will fit under your portafilter, which for anybody not in the know, that's the device that hooks onto the machine where your coffee is dispensed from. And it's more convenient if you can fit your vessel underneath. There are workarounds, but it's certainly convenient. And for particularly tall glasses or takeaway cups, there are versions of machine called tall or takeaway machines. So it's really useful at the early point to understand what you're going to be serving. Do you need a regular machine or do you need a machine with a raised height called a tall or a takeaway machine? That can really help you. The next thing is power. Because there are different sizes of elements inside the coffee machine, and the amount of power that you have available will also determine the choice. And right at the bottom level, that can go from sort of 13 amps, which is your traditional plug top, up to 30 amps, which might require a dedicated wall socket with an on and off isolator switch. And then you can go right up to more powerful sort of full three-phase systems for large four-group machines. So it's really important that you understand what power that you've got, because that will determine the maximum size of element and coffee machine that you can have. And if you're just starting off, you might find that to increase the power, you know, can cost a lot of money. And also you might be watching your electricity bills. So have a think about what power is available and what's the most practical size for you. Next is hot water. We all need hot water, whether it's in teas or whether it's in Americanos. And you may want to get that hot water from your coffee machine, or you might decide that you need a separate standalone hot water boiler. But what I would say is that often it's cheaper to get a sort of a one or a two group coffee machine and then supplement that with a hot water boiler, because hot water boilers are much less expensive. So really have a think about hot water, how you're going to service that. Do you expect it from your coffee machine, or do you want to have that separately? And it might be something that isn't even on your shopping list. So that's why I say these questions might not be super exciting, but they're great to ask them at the start so that you know what you're after.
Yeah, have a that's think about your... just on that point, that is a really good thing to mention, is that, and certainly we had the same setup. We had our coffee machine and we had a separate water boiler, and that was to take the heavy lifting in a way off the coffee machine, because really the priority of that was to produce great coffee. And I just thought I would jump in there just to highlight that and the difference it made in terms of workflow as well, teas and coffees.
To have teas and Americanos at one end of the machine, if you like, and then your milky drinks at the other can be a great way of speeding up workflow for sure. I'm a big fan of, you know, spread the load a little bit and create more working space if you can. Not at all. Well, listen, it's great to have some of these thoughts sort of authenticated from someone who's been at the coal face. I always say to people, have a think about your total budget, because there's nothing more upsetting than if somebody has spent all their money in a top-end machine and then they're left with very little funds for a grinder. And I think it's safe to say we're in the age of sort of on-demand grinders now. People understand the benefits of that. But they're not cheap. So leave enough money to make sure you're going to buy a decent grinder, because if you start with a bad grinder, everything else is uphill. If you start with a good grinder, then the journey is a much more pleasing one. You're much more likely to get great shots, to get good extraction, and you're much more likely to get consistency. So when you think of your total budget, think about all the hot beverage equipment that you need and then apportion it rather than just go gung-ho for coffee machine. We've seen people make that mistake, or they've left it to the shop fitter and the specifier to buy a grinder, and you know they might come in low end and you'll forever be regretting that. Have a think about service contracts, because machines of different degrees of complexity can cost a lot to have a service contract in years 2 and 3. These numbers can vary wildly. You know, that might be the difference between £400 a year and £1,500 a year. It can be a huge sum, so it's good to get that information up front. Have a think about water. You know, obviously your podcast is going out the whole of the UK and beyond, and water hardness varies incredibly across the UK. If you're in London, you're going to race through water filters. The water there is very hard. If you're in Scotland or parts of Wales or the Southwest, you might be blessed with nice soft water. So water filtration is really important. A, make sure you've got the space for it, and B, decide what system you're going to use and how you're going to measure the amount of water that you go through so that you can protect your machine wisely. To avoid water filtration or to ignore it is a bit like never having your car serviced. You're just asking for trouble, and it's not if, it's when. And think about your staff skill. You made a really great point about investing in staff, and I've had a lot of discussions recently, particularly through my involvement with the Beverage Standards Association as well, particularly with UK operators who are knuckling down because of the absence of easily available staff. They're really training their staff. They're really investing in them. And some of them are seeing wonderful improvements, people really raising up the ranks, people wanting to take on more responsibility, getting into management. It's an industry that has great opportunity, but do think about where your staff are now and where you need to take them. If you have a very high staff turnover, then you might want to invest in a system which is less labor intensive, or you might want to, you might think, no, my staff are great. They've been with me for a long time. I'm happy to invest in barista training. I know that I will reap the rewards. So be realistic about where your staff are. Be honest with yourself, because that will impact some of the solutions that you choose. Think about how long your machine you want it to last for. Some people might be quite happy thinking, well, I'm just starting up. If it lasts 2 years, according to my business plan, I'll be able to upgrade in year 3. Others might be thinking, well, I want 5 or 6 years from my machine. And you have to buy a machine that's fabricated correctly, that's got a good reputation for longevity, if that is your expectation. And ask manufacturers or resellers for testimonials about that. Don't just take their word from it from a brochure. And lastly, servicing your machine. Make sure that you can get service for your machine. Make sure that who you regard as your local engineer or your national engineer is likely to carry parts that will work in these machines. So really, that's my advice. When you're choosing a machine, if you answer all these questions honestly, then whoever you're speaking to at that point, you will be able to give them some really, really useful information to allow them to guide you towards the types of solutions that are most likely to work for you. You will have narrowed the field to really likely helpful solutions rather than just going out broad brush into a very diverse industry and reading brochures. If you can take away the pain by doing that homework, although it's not the most exciting in the world, that really would be my sound advice. And it doesn't matter whether you're one man with a coffee shop or you're a chain of pubs with 250 pubs and you're looking to upgrade your equipment, or you're an 18-strong coffee shop chain. All these questions, I think, are important. Once you've got the answers, you can really move forwards in choosing the best fit equipment, the best value, the best reliability, the best reputation, and the best solution for you. It's not a sheep dip approach. Everyone's needs may be different, but certainly any manufacturer with a wide range can help. Of course, you know, Frutino, we have a great range of solutions. We always have had, and we've got a different range of solutions depending on many of the answers to that. And that's why we've developed a range, because we understand the market. We've worked in it for long and we listen. But that would be generic advice for anyone at any level wanting to choose a new coffee machine.
Yeah, like you say, the last thing you want to be doing is spending money that is going beyond actually what you need a machine to do. And certainly I will keep going back to the fact that the people, if you can direct any more, invest more in your people, if that's a saving on your coffee machine to get you, you know, the coffee machine that you need, you could save, you can save significant amounts of money. And like I say, if that's invested, not just in your people, but, you know, I speak a lot about how much of a difference the people side of the business can make, certainly to a customer experience point of view and a service level. But yeah, we don't want to be spending, and certainly in this environment, we don't want to be spending more money than we need to on equipment, whatever that is. So I know you've mentioned it a couple of times about the certainly the simplicity of certainly servicing the Frutino machines and the availability of parts. What's the philosophy and the approach to how Frutino design and build their machines? What is it that, what are the key principles really about the design that Frutino really stick to?
Once again, it's a great question. And I think it's fair to say that, you know, Frutino has always held certain values and principles really core in its manufacturing process. So number one, robust construction. It's really important. Frutino understand the environments in which its machines work. They're busy environments. Things are getting knocked around. So their machines were and continue to be designed to be strong and robust. That's really important. And that's why they last such a long time. There's a quality of metal that goes into their construction, which is designed to last. It's designed to take bashes. If you compare that with some of the very pretty machines with very complex shapes that are perhaps sort of vacuum molded or formed from plastic, they might look wonderful, but they're quite vulnerable. And if they take a bash, they don't have anything like the rigidity of metal, which we use. So machines have got to be easy to service. For a variety of reasons, principally that as a catering operator, your uptime is number one priority to us. We want you being able to take money at the till for every second that you're open. And if, God forbidden, it does sometimes happen, if there's a problem with a machine, we want the engineer to come in and fix your machine as quickly as possible. So in terms of being easy to service, it must be easy to get at. Our panels, for example, can be taken off in a matter of seconds. So the engineer's straight in the machine, and he can, once he's in the machine, he can see what he's doing. There's enough space to get around, to change components, and to identify any problems and locate them and repair them quickly. Yeah. That's always been in the DNA, and I can tell you that the factory will never design a system that doesn't meet these criteria. Yeah. Parts are important as well. We're very lucky in that, you know, over 90% of all the parts in a Frutino machine are made in the factory itself. So we've got a quality control that gives us huge confidence in the ability and the performance of that machine. It also gives us a great cost control advantage as well. And we've got a legacy of many sort of universal parts across our machine range, so that there's less parts engineers require to carry in order to make any repairs out in the road, or where there are parts which we are not experts in and we're using sort of leading generic specific components. An example might be Parker valves. They are the leading manufacturer of such a component, and whether our machine is supplying a chain in the UK or it's going over to Canada or it's going out into Asia, we know that there is availability of these parts in all these countries all around the world as well. So everything's either made in-house or it's a very generic leading brand product. We pretty much use zero plastics in our design, possibly with the exception of the Porta filters and the handles, although we're moving in some across some of our range to wooden handles, because we know that with abuse and time, plastics can become brittle. They can crack and they can split. So metal all the way. Metal gives us strength. It's very easy to clean, and it's also hygienic. Stainless steel is good in a, from a hygiene point of view. Of course, there are some restrictions in that design philosophy because we are a bit constrained with what you can do with metal. Some shapes you can produce easily. Other shapes that you might be able to produce in other medium are a bit harder with metal. But our flip side to that is that we end up with less nooks and crannies for milk and debris to accumulate in. Therefore, you've got better hygiene and it's easier to do that. We also, all our research and development is done in-house. We use SolidWorks CAD. So we've got total control from the start to the finish. We have a very small supply footprint. Being in the Midlands, we're right in the heart of the UK manufacturing sector, and really raw materials come in one end and finished goods go out the other. And lastly, and this is something that's taken more prominence over the last few years, we have been quietly finding ways of dealing with any manufacturing waste and putting it back into a recycling process. So we almost have a closed loop in recycling now. Now, that has a number of really good benefits. It's great for the environment because we're not chucking waste out, but it's good for us and it's good for our customers because ultimately we are drilling down on costs, and hopefully that's being passed back in the form of continuing value to our customers. So that's really, that underlines everything that we do. It has to tick these boxes in order to pass go. But if you look at our machines, you know, there are still machines out there which are maybe sort of 8-10 years old, still going strong. And it's that these design principles that have allowed that to happen. So we see no reason to stray wildly from that, because although design trends change, we're also up ultimately accountable for our machines and the environment. And also our machines are wholly recyclable at their end of life as well. And we're very proud of that fact, being so metal-based, they can be returned into future uses. So yeah, that is the Fracino design ethos.
And just touching on one of the points you said there about the ease of servicing the machines, is it's the difference between someone, an engineer coming to your store if you have got an issue and having to maybe take the machine away if they can't access it properly, to have the ability to, like you say, if it's easy to work on, easy to access the components, it's a better likelihood that the repair will be done in place with minimal business interruption. I know as soon as you start getting machines taken away and temporary ones put in, you've got your team are working with different equipment. It just adds to the headache, which when you're buying a machine, you don't always think about. But little things like that, these are the details that we talk about a lot in terms of whether it's your workflow everywhere. If you can save these 1-2% across multiple areas of your business, those marginal gains, which has been, you know, a big term that's in the cycling world, it's where it came from. But you have to think like that with business as well. And little things like that can make a massive difference to the overall operation of your business.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think that perhaps in these times, people are starting to drill down to that detail. Just as in the cycling world, it was all about, can we shave off 0.1 second? Yeah. You know, in the hospitality industry now, you know, getting another percentage point on margin can be the difference between success and failure. I think that if the litmus test often of any machine is, ask an engineer, are these machines any good? Are they easy to fix? And just as you might ask an AA man, oh, I'm thinking about buying a Ford or a Mazda or an Audi, are they any good? Ask an engineer about Fracinos, because I guarantee that Fracino machines will probably be amongst their highest first-time fix rates. Because they open the machine up, if they've got a spanner, a set of tools and a multimeter, they can diagnose, and it's very likely that they'll have the parts on board to fix the system. So we're very proud of that fact. And where we excel is with some of the larger groups and chains who perhaps have whole systems and departments dedicated to that sort of workflow and repair and the whole machine life. When they've done these sums, they start to understand that the attention that we put into, you know, manufacturing and of that quality, it really does save money over the long term. And we're very proud of that. We're all about value. There's no smoke and mirrors with a Fujino machine. You get what you see, and we stand by our reputation and we look after our customers. But I think you're absolutely right. Sometimes if people don't put the key steps in when they're looking at equipment, it's not just the fact that it might break down. It's what happens then. What are the implications? Does a customer come in and not get a coffee and then find the coffee shop five doors down? Do they lose revenue? Do they suddenly have an unplanned for bill of £800 that there's just nowhere in the P&L to squeeze that in without a high pain barrier? So yeah. Everything that you're talking about now, I have a feeling that it will become more in focus, that there will be a demand maybe for a sort of a procurement that really looks deeper at all these areas, so that everyone can continue to grow and to have profit in what might be slightly tougher times ahead.
Yeah. So how can people find out more about Fujino and potentially look at finding maybe a supplier where they are? Because I know you're certainly in the States, you're certainly in obviously the UK, but you mentioned there Canada, the Asia market as well. How can people find out certainly about the machines and who to go to purchase them?
Well, we've got a number of different ways that people can really access all of our products and services. I think perhaps one of the most useful tools that we've got is our website, www.fratino.com. That's a really useful resource for having a look at the whole expanse of our equipment range. We've largely spoken today about espresso machines and whatnot, but you'll find all of our hot water boilers on there and a whole range of other solutions, and also mobile equipment. We do perhaps one of the most successful dual fuel ranges in the UK, and in addition to coffee machines, we've got dual fuel water boilers as well. Jump on the website. We're a great believer in showing people visually what we're about. So we've got a lot of good video content, which is up to date. We've also got all the technical specifications, and we've got brochures, etc., that you can download. You can also learn more about the whole history of our business, how it's evolved over the many years, and some of the awards that we've picked up over that time. In addition to that, through our many sort of trading partners all around the world, you'll find us on social media. If you do a search for Fujino, you'll find endorsements, testimonials, pictures of our machines in far-flung places, and in tuk-tuks and the backs of Piaggio Appies, on trikes and mobile offices and restaurants, bars, airline lounges, you name it. It'll give you some idea of where our machines are enjoyed and used. And in addition to that, you know, anyone's welcome to phone our factory. The number's on the website. Because our route to market is quite diverse, because we have a very wide-ranging series of customer needs at the end, the factory has a dedicated team that will speak with people and then connect them with the best provider that can look after their needs specifically. But it's also worth saying we've got a fantastic showroom in Birmingham as well, and we regularly host visits from sort of groups and chains, and we're very proud to take advantage of our showroom and to also show them the whole manufacturing process from the start to finish. Because really, when people see our story, they understand who we are and what we're about, and then it's up to them to choose if we're right for them. But I think people are pleasantly surprised by just what goes on, and we're very proud to share it with as many people as we possibly can. A lot of our visitors are from overseas. One of my challenges is to really engage more with the domestic market and the groups and chains that we have here, and to help them engage with us. So we welcome any discussion, large or small, but the starting point, good starting point, the website, or pick up the phone to the factory. We're delighted to help everyone.
Yeah, I know certainly, which is actually about the second guest we had on the podcast, Shannon Cornelius, has very recently got a mobile trailer, and she's got one of your machines in there.
Oh, brilliant.
And I actually, she didn't know I was speaking to you, but I had an email from her the other day and just said, I've got this Fujino machine, absolutely love it. So it's very clear that people are are very happy with your machines. I know even locally to me, there's one particular coffee shop, they must have had it getting on for 10 years, if not maybe longer than that, you know? So it's, like you say, you're talking about the longevity of the equipment. It's really good.
When I was at Kimbo, we decided that for some of our exhibitions and shows, we would buy one of the little three-wheeler Piaggio Appy trucks. And we bought one and we got it all converted and we put a Frecino machine in the back of it. And I have to say, although I remember breaking down in the little Piaggio Appy on the North Circular, which was not a lot of fun, and it broke down on one other occasion. But the one thing that never broke down was the coffee machine. So I'm always pleased to see them, whether it's on tricycles or appies. Yeah, they do a great job. And of course, mobile catering is we're seeing a lot more of that now, pop-ups and some people wanting sort of solutions in green spaces as well. So I think it's an exciting time for outside catering. Maybe COVID as well taught us that, you know, you can use your pavement, you can sell your wares on the pavement as well. So exciting times. But that's nice to hear. It's always lovely to hear of anyone that's had a good experience, really. That's we exist for that. So pass on my thanks for her nice comments. Do.
Listen, Angus, thank you very much for joining me on the Cafe Hustle, talking through these points that people should be considering when they're choosing this, really, which is a really big investment as far as the coffee shop goes. So listen, thank you for your time and thank you for sharing your knowledge on the Cafe Hustle.
No, it's been a real pleasure. I've followed your podcast with enthusiasm and I've learned a lot from the podcast that I've listened to. So if even a small cluster of people feel that they're slightly more empowered to make better choices moving forwards, then I'm delighted to have been part of the experience. So thank you, Andy.
If you're finding you're spending a huge amount of time during the day taken up by staff admin or dealing with the communication with your teams, you need to check out Road to Cloud, which will save you time, money, and a lot of headaches. Head over to thecafehustle.com/Road to Cloud to get your free 30-day free trial. So the key takeaways from my chat with Angus are that it's really great to have these great top-end machines, these really big reputation machines that are throughout the coffee industry, but are they actually what you need for your business? At the minute, we've got to be careful about where we're spending our money. And when we're looking for a machine, I think personally, it's all about having something that's consistent and reliable and making sure that when it does have an issue, that it can be fixed really quickly. And like you say, I am really an advocate for putting any additional money into our people and our teams, because that's where we get the payback. These are the people who are working for us, delivering that experience. Again, I know we talk about it a lot, but that is where the difference is. We have people who are working for us, delivering an experience, and that is what we're selling to our customers, not a great cup of coffee. So again, loads to think about wherever you are in your phase, whether you're just in the process of setting up your coffee shop or whether you are established and you're looking at potentially replacing your equipment. And the likes of Regina, they've got so many different styles. Like I know we were looking at they've got like a copper skinned one, which looks so good. You have to check that out. And a load of, like, they've got a retro manual machine as well, which, depending on what you're looking for in your coffee shop, like, these things pop, you know. So make sure you check them out, see what they've got. And anyway, thank you again for joining me on the Cafe Hustle. I really appreciate you spending your time with us, and I know I've said this in many episodes now, but I really appreciate it, especially when we have longer episodes like this. So thank you very much, and look forward to welcoming you back on the next episode of the Cafe Hustle.